Hi, this is Jason Hammaker from the band Frotis, and this is my chapter of or from. What do you think?
Of.
Hello, this is Jason Hammaker. Actually, I'm going to use a movie voice. Hello, this is Jason Hammaker. I'm from the band Frotis. You are listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Oh my God, that was the most erotic intro I've ever had.
Wow.
It's hot. I'm gonna need a moment.
Wow.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
Welcome back to the next chapter or two of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and this week we have Jason Hammaker, the drummer from Frotis. Infamous Jason Hammaker. Insane Jason Hammaker. Crazy Jason. So here's the deal. I wanted to try something a little bit different. I don't want to put out a 2.5 hour podcast because I'm not Joe Rogan, but I'm a little bit baffled at how when you put out a two-parter, it seems like not as many people listen to the second part. Like, even if you put tracks 6 through 10 of the new Zayo album on it, less than half the people go back and listen to it. I don't get that. It's kind of enigmatic to me. So I decided I'm going to try something a little bit different. Today, you're going to get two podcasts. So listen to this one. And then a couple hours later, I'm going to put up the second Jason Hammaker. Use Your Illusions 1 and 2. I'm doing a Guns. I stole this idea from Guns N' Roses. So today is the day you get to decide what kind of person are you. When you buy a Twix, do you shove both of them straight into your mouth like I do and eat them two at a time? Or do you eat one now, save one for later? We'll find out. A little bit of soul searching we're going to do today. I want to thank Seth W., y'all know him from Skull Toaster. He came on as my co-host just to help me out. Had a great time with him. Always thankful when he comes on the show. And real quick, before we dive into this, I have a patron to thank. Jacob. You know who you are, buddy. Jacob is the new star of one of the latest Skull Toaster videos. Kid's hilarious. He became a pretty good pal of ours and met him out in Pittsburgh for the Zayo show. He's rad, and now he's helping me. So thanks, man. Here's your public thank you. Let's get to the point here. We're going to talk to Jason. Look, man, there's not a lot of music. You're hearing his new band, Regents. That's about it. That's all you're going to get. We're just gonna get right to it. This is unedited, raw Jason Hammaker twice. Here we go. Jason Hammaker.
Dude, I'm going to send you guys. I have a bunch. Maybe it's like 3 weeks ago. I just went down this whole fake voiceover hole and just started making a bunch of fake voiceovers about craft beer. That was
editor's note.
I had to drop this in here. As soon as we were done talking to Jason, he sent over this craft beer voiceover thing. Too good to not put in the episode. Check this out.
Gandhi. Moses. Barack Obama. Vladimir Putin. Jesus Christ. George Washington. Queen Elizabeth. These people have one thing in common. Craft beer.
Okay, sorry. Back to me and Seth talking to Jason. You had to hear that. What is wrong with this dude?
Who does that? Who has time?
I'm currently drinking Sly Fox 360 IPA. Do one for Sly Fox. Go ahead.
Beer in every single angle. Sly Fox 360 craft. Personal. Hopped for your pleasure.
Yep. Multiple angles.
I Sly like that. Fox.
Not multiple angles. All the angles.
All angles, yeah.
Uh-huh. See, if I prepared, I would have said degrees.
Okay. It's all right. We'll forgive you. So,
let's party.
I already know this is going to be so much fun. I brought a guest host along with me tonight. I got Seth Werkheiser on the line. Seth, how are we doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me again.
I go from Jason Hammaker, who talks like this, to Seth, who goes, "Hi, I'm fine."
Hey guys, can we talk about apps?
So fun. And we got Jason Hammaker. Brother,
what's up?
I don't know where to start with you because yeah. I've never met you before. We've talked on the phone briefly. I already know you're a friggin' lunatic, and I'm excited to talk to you. This is great, man. I feel like everybody knows everybody, kind of. And
right.
Whether you really know the person or whether you've only spoken to them for 90 minutes on your podcast, all roads point to Jason Hammaker.
What?
And we've arrived at the end. Now that we've come.
Last episode right here. Final episode. Right.
This is it. This
all
is
right.
It. It's the last, first with Jason Hammaker, last episode of As the Story Goes, because nothing's going to top this. I'm so stoked about it. I don't know where to start with you. How are you?
No pressure. Oh, where's my tea?
I don't know.
I got oranges. I got tea. I got Hawthorne tea.
It's like we're talking to my grandmother.
I have a shawl. Where's my shawl? I'm feeling chilled.
That's not a coaster. It's a doily.
Right. I'm good, man. Again, had my oranges, misplaced my Hawthorne berry tea.
How do you misplace tea?
I forgot to bring it up, and then we had like our tech support issues.
Yeah.
And then I just forgot to bring it up.
You had tech support issues, Seth.
That is correct. So for all you listeners, I'm tech savvy in a way that gets me to do what I need to do.
Not podcast.
Correct. Correct. So we did a series of troubleshooting, and Seth came up with I needed to adjust the settings in my Google account.
Mm-hmm.
Google account settings.
And Scott Mellinger and Zayo just started screaming because he was like, "That's what went wrong when I was on that stupid podcast." can hear him now. Let's start off with that. When you and I were talking, you said, "Of all the things we need to talk about, we have to talk about FROTUS. We have to talk about Syria and the amazing. Oh my God, I can't wait to get into that. We have to talk about the origins of Christianity. We have to talk about running an Airbnb. We have a lot to cover." But the one thing that you told me to purposely remind you, so let's just get it out of the way now.
Okay.
You said, "Dude, when I come on your stupid podcast," and I think I think you said, "When I come on your awful, terrible podcast that no one listens to, make sure you remind me to talk about the show when I was in Frodus that I played with Zayo, it is the single weirdest show I've ever played. I said, don't tell me a word. I want to hear
okay. all organic. This is, yeah, we'll get real. We'll just hit the deep end. There are several fans somewhere that are probably still praying for me. Like, that was January 98, maybe a little bit, winter of 98, and we played in their town. I think it was like Erie, Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. And Frodus had recently signed the Tooth and Nail, and we had done one tour, and Frodus was not a Christian band. At the time, Nathan, our bass player, was not Christian. Mm-hmm. I was, and Shelby kind of was, but it never came into our music at all. It came into the kind of a way we behaved, but not what we sang about or anything else like that.
Okay.
And so signing to Tooth and Nail in the late 90s, we had an interaction with a type of fan that was either bummed that we weren't overtly Christian, like Zayo, or annoyed that we were there to begin with. So I'll never forget. So we're playing with Zayo, and I'm pretty psyched. And this is right before we were heading to Europe to go on tour with Refused. It was like a 3-month tour in Europe, and we did like a couple of shows before we left. And the crowd at the Zayo show was so intense. I'll never forget, I'm setting up my drums, and there was a kid in a shirt, it's like kind of a loose white shirt, staring off at a wall, just screaming at the top of his lungs as we're setting up, and there's no music, "I love you, Jesus Christ!" over and over and over at a wall. I was like, this is going to get so real. And so we play, and it was awesome. Zaya was awesome. But as I'm breaking down, that same kid that was screaming at the wall comes over and is demanding, while I'm breaking down my drums, that I come into a prayer group with him. I was like, dude, I need to pack up so Zayo can come on and play. He's like, you need to come pray with me. I was like, I'm not going to do that, but you can continue to scream at the wall, and I will pack up, and we can talk afterwards. And he's like, you need to pray with me now. And then another friend walks up, and I'm pretty sure it was either him, but he had a shirt on that just said, pray for Frodus. Like, people were making shirts concerned. Yeah, like, dude, it was ridiculous. And I was kind of like, what? Like, the amount of judgment, like, the amount of passive judgment that happened on me as an individual and on us as a band by these people was kind of mind-blowing. And it had nothing to do with anyone's really understanding of anything other than what they felt conditioned that they needed to bestow on us. And it was right when Brett had started the Juliana theory, mm-hmm. and he was trying to get Juliana theory to do the U.S. leg of, we were talking about Juliana theory playing some of the Refused shows. It was just a really, really intense side of Christianity that is everything that I just knew was there in relationship to that record label, right. But we had never experienced up until that show. There was that show, and then we played a show in Indianapolis, Indiana. That's where the kid had to pray for Frodo's shirt on, was at Indianapolis, Indiana. But I was just like, dude.
Is that because the kid from Erie telephoned ahead?
Yeah. They're coming.
They're coming.
Start
just a heads up, man.
Right. Start praying and make shirts.
get your markers out. It was like a Sharpie shirt.
So it wasn't like a pre-printed shirt. It was just,
dude,
a white
if
shirt
it was pre-printed, from... I'd be kind of psyched, to be honest. Like, if someone screen printed a bunch of shirts,
I'd buy a Pray for Frodo shirt.
I would wear one.
Yeah.
Oh.
So
there you go, man. Early 98. Zayo's got no shoes on. Kids are screaming at the wall. There you have it.
In Pennsylvania. I'm so proud that happened in PA. What can I say?
Yeah, we hold it down here for that weirdness.
That's true. So wait, Seth, you're in the Poconos?
I totally am, yeah.
Do you know those two guys, the two twins, Zach and Zeke?
Zach and Zeke.
Librarians?
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I haven't seen them in like a decade, but totally. Growing up.
They did a show for, it was either Frotus or Decahedron at that Howard Johnson's at the like hotel in like the lobby.
Probably. Yeah.
The one right off 80?
I don't know. It was. I can't remember if it was Frotus or if it was Decahedron, but it was with Computer Cougar, Charles Maggio from Rorschach and Gern Blanston and stuff.
Okay.
Just at that Howard Johnson's or at the hotel. And
I know they booked shows. Yeah. They booked a lot of shows at the library.
Maybe it was. It was definitely a hotel because they had there's like a kitchen there. And I swear the guy was like mafia. He was like super Italian and was yelling at everyone. And he and I became really good bros over the course of the evening. It's like, hey, I need to get a picture with you guys. Come on over. I was like, whoa.
You do impressions too. This is going to be good.
That's the extent of that's also my Boston. That's my Boston.
That's a terrible Boston.
That's also my Scottish accent.
Wow, no, that needs work.
Yeah, you guys like the Highlands.
Hey, how about them Highlands?
Loch Ness Monster over here, eh?
Can you pull the mic a little further away from your mouth?
Of course I can.
No, that's close. It's in your
mouth. Yeah.
Pull it away a little bit. It's very hot. Woo, your Scottish was like in my head. It was, wow.
Perfect.
But the good old Poconos, close to the Lehigh Valley, close to where Travis is, close to Scranton and Wilkes-Barre. There's a lot of music up there over the years and stuff. So, yeah.
Now, when I mentioned Jason Hammaker, Seth was like, oh, my God, I love that guy. You guys met back in the day.
Can you tell on the Dillinger Escape Plan tour, wasn't it?
No, but it was in New York City. And yeah.
No, I had a day off.
That's right. You were traveling with them, right?
Well, on that Megadeth tour. Yeah. That was 10 years ago.
The Megadeth tour? You mean Gigantor?
Yeah, the first one, yeah.
I saw that in Reading. So you were there?
Yeah, totally.
What? Why? Why were you there?
I was on tour with Dillinger.
I mean, I know why you were there, but I'm
Dillinger, so Ben, the guitarist, got hit by a car.
Right.
He got turned into, it was like a delivery truck hit him and tore his rotator cuff and herniated his disc. This is a couple months. And before the tour, Ben called and was like, dude, we got this tour offer to do stadiums or whatever, arenas with Megadeth and all these bands. Do you want to come out on tour as massage therapist? Like, yeah, let's do it. And so that was one of the only tours. I've only been on two tours where I did not play drums. Mm-hmm. And one was with International Noise Conspiracy. I just went and sold shirts to hang out. And the other one was going out with Ben to kind of keep him at least. He wouldn't get better going on tour, but he wouldn't get worse if I came. I worked on it.
Gotcha.
You know,
and you have training to be a massage therapist. He didn't just randomly go, I wonder if the drummer from Frotus would be interested in rubbing my shoulder.
Well, the way it happened, it was funny. He called me and he just goes, yo, are you licensed? I was like, to drive? Like, he didn't qualify the license. I was like, I mean, for what? He's like, you know, for massage. I was like, of course, man. I was like, of course I'm licensed. They can't work illegally here. He's like, oh, I messed up my shoulder. Do you want to come out? And so, yeah. So we went out on that Gigantor. And, like, it was super official. Like, we, you know, I had to set up a whole medical medical stuff with his insurance agency and his chiropractor, and it was, you know, billing codes and the whole nine yards.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was pretty advanced. And then at the very end, I think it was in Jersey. At the very end, he hurt his shoulder even worse. It was either his neck or his shoulder, and they had to leave. They had to bail. I actually wrote a whole article on that tour for Alternative Press. It was like a 7-page, like it was like photos and then like a tour diary.
Whoa. Man, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Because we were in New York, they played where was it? It was outside of New York. It was like on a harbor. I don't remember. Whoa. But yeah, I remember just kind of – how did I even – was it for Buzz Grinder or something?
Like somehow we got in touch.
Yeah, how were we in touch? And then I was like, yo, I'm here. And I was like, you – we went out to eat or something. Like I met you by
– yeah, at some vegetarian place.
Yeah.
In Soho or something like that.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
We went out to eat. Was you? Was it your wife? Girlfriend?
Yeah, wife. Ex-wife now, yep.
Yeah, later.
Yeah, see ya. But, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it had to have been something through Buzz Grinder, through some, yeah, some interview maybe, or did something.
Did you interview Decahedron for something?
Maybe. I mean,
that would have been what it would have been around. That was maybe. That is what's weird is so that Gigantour happened right when I stumbled into all the serious stuff. So I was on the tour bus with all these really intense books about genocide and the history of the early church. And then Decahedron just broke up like 6 weeks before that.
Okay.
So my guess is we spoke.
Yeah.
So then, as always, anytime I meet someone, I'm like, dude, we've got to hang out.
And yeah.
Then I try.
I feel like we talked about that some a bit back then, the Syria thing, like that you were talking about doing it or going.
Yeah, yeah. It had just started I just stumbled into it.
Right.
Right. 6 weeks before that.
And from our trip out to Pittsburgh, like how crazy that is of how that's come so full circle.
Let me jump in and tell you my end of it. It was Chris Raines from Spitfire was on the podcast, and he's the second person that told me I should talk to Hammaker. First one being Shelby, like a while ago. And I was like, all right, I'll get to it. And Chris Raines kind of connected me with you, and I was like, all right, I'll talk to you. I got a hold of you. I'll pencil you in. Yeah.
I'll talk to you.
My shoulder hurts too. And so in talking to you, you were like, where are you? I said, an hour north of Philly. He's like, I'll be in Philly on the 18th. We should hang out. Just like you just said, hang out. And I was like, I love this dude already. And I was like, I never travel, but I will be out of town. I'm going to see Zayo on the 18th. I'll be in Pittsburgh. And you said, you should go see my photo exhibit. It's on display in Pittsburgh. And I was like, get the hell out of here. What are the odds?
Yeah. So, and you're like, do you live in Pittsburgh? I was like, no, I do not live in Pittsburgh.
No, I live in D.C. And I was like, what are your pictures doing? And what's going on? What are you talking about? I had no idea about Lost Origins or any of the serious stuff. And this seems like a good segue to get right into it. So
yeah.
Wow. Go ahead.
Now you go first. So I'm really curious, especially since because it's a really interesting and sometimes weird place for me to be, where according to what time period someone has met me, they either know band, like either like me with music or me without music, as like behind the camera or documentarian. And my close friends know the whole picture, but not really knowing anything about it and stumbling into that photo exhibit, what did you think?
It was one of the more moving, I mean, the group that I was with, me, Seth, and our buddy Jeremiah from Metal Bandcamp Gift Club, and my friend Brian, We all went there, and you could feel it in the room. There was something in the air, man. It was, I mean, there's a lot of big words, and and I couldn't pronounce anybody's names, but
I can't either.
The impression that I got from it, and I'm gonna destroy this, so that I need you to realign and fix everything. But
sure,
I basically got the impression that you went to Syria to make an audio recording of what is believed to be the first of all Christian music.
Correct.
Okay. While you were there, hey, decision maker who would make that decision, can I take some photographs? I happen to be a photographer also. And they let you take pictures of buildings that have really never been photographed before.
Yes and no. So
okay.
So the permission part of it, I didn't ask. I just took pictures. Right.
Okay.
And so the turn of events were, so, and this is actually kind of one of the tragedies of what's happening in Syria, is the city of Aleppo is one of the world's oldest cities, and it's actually named after Abraham. When Abraham left Ur and went down into the Promised Land, local lore, or, you know, historical legend, that he stopped in the city of Aleppo and milked his sheep, and the hill is where the ancient castle is. Like, when you walked in the photo exhibit, there's a big blue photograph right in front of you on the left, and that's the big introduction. That's the hill where Abraham allegedly hung out and slept. So in Arabic, the town is called Halab, which means milk in Arabic.
Okay.
But one of the components is that this group of Christians are from a historical city called ancient. It's called Edessa. That was the Greek name for it. Mm-hmm. It's considered the first Christian city ever. And they were refugees into Syria in 1923 from the Armenian genocide. I mean, it gets really heavy. I mean, kind of, if we want to get into like the history of it, we can definitely go in. But essentially, this group of ancient Christians were refugees inside Syria in the 20s, and it is the only building in the world that does that one specific chant practice.
Okay.
And that is why it's very difficult to hear, and that is when, you know, kind of what I stumbled into finding out that it's not really available, when I volunteered to make it available. So the photography component of the whole project was to photograph the community, where they live, how they live, what's the neighborhood like. And then I had to get official permission from the Syrian government to do all of it. And the former Syrian ambassador to the United States, this is a highly abbreviated version, he's a big art fan. So he was just like, hey, I love the idea, but I really want to see your pictures too. And when I showed him, then he said, I want to make these commercially available. It's like, what does that mean? It's like, you should do a book. It's like, I'd love to do a book. It's like, what's it going to take? Like, I need to go back multiple times. I need to really spend some time in the city and just kind of absorb what it is to figure out how to really reflect it. And there hasn't been a photo book on the city of Aleppo in English. It's always Damascus or something about the Roman era of Syria. And so, yeah, I got tasked to make a book on the city of Aleppo, and that's where all these photos come from. The book's not done, but, mm-hmm. You know, I did that. That the exhibits in Pittsburgh, I did that for the first time like 2 years ago. It's actually 2 years ago, yeah. And it's just been sitting at my house.
But, dude, I've been to Pittsburgh twice in my life. I went once when I was about 11 and March 18th. So the odds, just the odds of
yeah,
being there when I was, you know what I mean?
I'm totally
blown away by the entire thing. And it was moving. I knew that something heavy was going on, something major. And it was, you know, to get quite frank about it, it's transitional stuff to a 40-year-old man when you're going through life and your beliefs and what do I believe? What am I? What do I believe versus what have I just accepted my entire life and everything? And
yeah,
I felt something in the air in that room. Period.
Yeah, like my struggle being, you know, my dad's a minister. My dad's a Southern Baptist minister. Is what do I believe versus do I believe or am I brainwashed? You know, right. and brainwashed not by my parents because to give my father credit, he was dad at home. Like I never got like the minister's lecture about being into Metallica. You know, like my friend's parents did that. My dad did not, you know. It was like everyone else at the church that would judge or, you know, be critical and everything else. And but yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Circle back to that. You said, what do I believe versus, you know, you're picking through the brainwash part of it.
Yeah.
Give me the abbreviated tour inside Jason Hammaker's head with that stuff right now.
It's a pretty apropos time of year. I'll give you the – so you guys are all – I'm assuming you're familiar with the weapons record, the Frotus – the last rec, and we washed our weapons in the sea.
Washed our weapons in the sea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know the song 699?
Shelby was talking
about that. Ding, that song is about Shelby's dad getting sick and about my girlfriend being diagnosed with – terminal cancer.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, 10 months later, she, you know, we're at her funeral and last week was the 16th anniversary of her dying. And, so 16 years later, I'm married, I've got kids, you know, I have a house, I've done, you know, I've got all this stuff. But then if you really look at everything else, then I've got this whole other side where it's, I've got this huge archive of destroyed culture and, you know, I've got these recordings and I've got all these photographs and I would have had none of that had my girlfriend lived, you know, I wouldn't like everything would be different. We probably wouldn't even be on this conversation had everything, had she lived or had she not gotten sick. And so the providence related to all of my experiences is really heavy, you know, and it's one of those things of if I sit down and can I write down my own personal creed, you know, like this is what I believe. I can't, you know, like to be honest, I just can't. I believe in a lot of gray. I believe in being fluid enough in what you believe to allow for the truth to come in. Whereas a lot of people are so black and white, it's really easy to be concrete, but it's really difficult to absorb anything if you were made out of concrete. If that makes any sense.
Makes totally perfect sense.
And so I identify as a Christian. I identify in most of theology related to Christianity. I do not go to church almost ever. I go like Catholics on the holidays. But you know, where does that leave me now? I don't know. A believer with a question mark, you know?
Right.
Like it's Mark something, the most inspirational verse I take out of the texts is especially now as a dad, is when the kid's possessed, he's messed up, he's on the Sea of Galilee, mm-hmm. and the father comes and he asks Jesus, like, hey, can you help my son? And Jesus looks right at the dad and says, do you believe? And his response was, and this is the verse, I believe, but help me with my disbelief. And that's kind of the synopsis of where I am.
That's fair.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell.
This got heavy quick.
Man, dude,
you were lighthearted stuff.
You were massaging Ben's shoulder 10 minutes ago. Look where we landed.
Dude, this is this is what's funny. Like, so this is how I am. You know, like it's pretty polar. There's no middle ground. Right. We're either laughing or we are talking about ancient Christianity or we are talking about death and resurrection.
That's why when you turn the funny on, it is so funny because you know as soon as that relay switches the other way, this shit's going to get heavy and we got to have some balance. You know? That's amazing. What are the plans for the book? Is there any projected date or is it just your
chair? No. So essentially what happened was I did that photo exhibit 2 years ago. And then I decided to start my own record label and release some other ancient musics that I've recorded. All of them are recorded in Syria. So it's four recordings. The first one is a Sufi Muslim recording. The second was an Armenian Christian recording. And those came out for Record Store Day last year and the year before. And they did really well, to my surprise.
What do you mean by very well?
Billboard number 13.
It's pretty good. I've heard of it.
I mean, wow. Yeah, like it was crazy. Like I wasn't really expecting anyone to care. And I had to.
I love the record label angle too, because I didn't mean to start smirking and giggling, but I always think of like nowadays records labels are like, well, can you tour?
yeah, exactly.
You're talking about music written in like the year one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of a different spin on record.
Well, so but what's so interesting is it's different, but it's also the same. Like I approach all of this just like I'm being in a band. Like all the Lost Origin stuff is the same, which is I've got all this material, and instead of a band going out on tour, that's why I go out and do all these speaking tours. Like I have a record player. Where is it? It's on the floor behind me. Okay. I have a record player, and I've got a lathe cut record where I get up in front of wherever I'm speaking, and I tell a story. Like I introduce the project, and then play a chant, and tell a story, and play a chant, and kind of go back and forth. And it's the same thing. It's like some of the stories are hilarious and insane, and some of the stories are really depressing and sad, and there's a little bit of in between. And then I play a photo, a slideshow of some of my photos, essentially like a condensed version of that exhibit. Mm-hmm. And I play music to that, and then I end and take questions, you know. But it's from a label standpoint, it's kind of the same. I do it the same way too. Like I have like all my hardcore friends doing the distro for it, you know, and I have merch. I mean, not really, but I try to do I did a couple of shirts last year, and it just felt weird. Had like the Armenian album is called 40 Martyrs. It's the name of the church in Aleppo, the Armenian church. And we did a 40 Martyrs shirt with the ancient Armenian on it, and it was cool. But it just felt weird to make shirts of that stuff.
40 Martyrs. That totally sounds like a hardcore band.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow, Oh my God. I don't know where to take this conversation. It's too big.
But I can only imagine, like, I mean, we were at that photo exhibit and there was just music playing in the background and it was like moving enough. I can only imagine what it would be like we're here listening to you now say this and it's moving. I can only imagine what that's like in a live setting.
Dude, after that, so that photo exhibit went up before I did. The one in Pittsburgh went up when I did it here in Alexandria. It went up before I released any album, right? And it came out. So that is kind of that exhibit is my first real public display of anything that I've done, right? Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to installing that Pittsburgh exhibit, and it was heavy. Like just doing it, like now that, like when I did it the first time, it was bad. But you know, 2 years later, it's much, much worse, and you know, more people have died, and it was really emotional for me to just sit there and look at it all on the wall. Like what that wall represents is just so much. Like what that exhibit represents is so heavy that it was actually pretty hard for me to. We put it like. don't know about you guys, but essentially the way that I operate is I will take care of everything. Like, okay, this needs to be done. Then the second it's done, then I can be introspective or something,
right.
You know? Right. And so just I'm driving, you know, I brought my friend Jason Wood. He was in the band Inching Down. He came up with me and we hung the whole thing together. And I wasn't really sure what it would be like in Pittsburgh. I've never done a photo exhibit really outside of DC. And so I wasn't really sure what response would be, if anyone would care. Like, I just always assume no one cares, you know?
Sure.
I do. I just always assume no one's going to care.
Right.
But it was great. Like, turnout was great, you know? Like, people were really engaged.
To answer your question, when you said, I know people from both, you know, I know people from the music side, people know me from this side, not even having to do with the music. And you were asking, I know you as the drummer from Protus. I know you as the guy that does tricky stuff on your ride cymbals and your toms, you know? when you said, I have a photo exhibit from my trip to Syria, I was like, cool, I'm going to go look at awesome pictures of buildings or something.
Right, right.
I didn't know what I was about to walk in on.
I
started putting together what was going on as we were walking around reading everything. And where it all came together for me was when you walk into the back room.
Yeah.
The second photo on the left was a picture of a man who was abducted and no one has seen him since.
Oh, yeah. That's a guy I lived with.
That man's gone and I got the impression that photo is most likely not with us anymore.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, because normally
I was staring into the eyes of what I considered to be this could be a dead person.
And yeah, in that same community,
I had like this, oh my god, it's totally like,
yeah,
it all just popped moment, and I was like, I have walked into something super serious and thought I was coming to look at buildings.
Yeah, and what's intense is that community voted on the New Testament. You know, like the monastery.
No, I don't. Explain that.
There was a council in 340 where people decided who was going in. Like what books were going to be voted in as the official canon of the New Testament. Okay. The Syrian Orthodox were part of that council.
Hmm.
That is the, and you know, so that guy, you know, there's maps of all this stuff of how each archbishop relates back to Peter or back to James. It's really tangible.
Right.
It becomes really tangible. So, for example, one of the, if not the oldest Syrian Orthodox monastery, was built in 340. It's in now in Turkey, meaning, you know, it used to be Syria before the borders got drawn.
Borders, right.
But up on the hill, behind the hill, is where Paul would stay in the caves. It's just intense.
You know what's intense is that I'm having a conversation with a guy who is basically standing where the Bible was happening.
Yeah.
And you still say believer with a question mark behind it. and that's fair to me, but I think it's
you have to define believer.
Super powerful to be in the position. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's like I said,
because I don't know what traditions you guys are raised in, but you know, I was raised in 100% biblical literalism,
mm-hmm.
you know, Southern Baptist. So it's the understanding of what the Christian faith is. I have it in a very, very limited scope of understanding. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden working very closely with one of the oldest Christian communities, it takes on a whole different, like the way that they approach their faith is totally different. It's cultural too.
Right.
You know, like you've got the Bible and you've got history and you've got tradition. All three of those are the components of the Orthodox Church. And mm-hmm. two of those are taken out in a lot of the, like a lot of the Protestant traditions. You know, it's just kind of being steeped in that history is really, it's life changing. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not about me. It's like, it's not believer question marks. It may be believer in quotes. You know, like, all I'm right. a believer. You know?
Right. Okay. All right.
Does that make sense? Does that make more sense?
You gotta maybe just move the punctuation around a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting. it makes total sense. It's unbelievable. Seth, let's tell him about the other unbelievable part.
Oh no.
your photo exhibit in Pittsburgh is open from 2 to 5 on Saturdays. That's it, right? We couldn't have timed our day more perfectly. I pulled my car up right in front of this place. It is called the Irma
Freeman Center for Imagination.
Right.
So I pulled right up front and it was like 2:10. I was like, nailed it. This is perfect. I love when my schedule comes together. It makes me feel like I've got my shit organized. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I walked up and I'm sashaying up to the door and I grab the handle and I put my thumb down on the, and it doesn't move.
Nope.
And I'm looking inside and the thing's locked and it's dark. And I'm like, oh, come on. It's open for 3 hours a week. They have to be open. So we're shaking it, shaking the door. You know, he always checked the door 4 times. Yeah. I called the number on there and everything. I got some dude's voicemail. I'm like, oh no. Now what do? They're just running late, I guess. Seth, his default for everything is, let's hit a coffee bar, right? Directly.
Instead of let's go bowling, let's get right. coffee.
Right. Screw it, dude. Let's go bowling.
I'll agree with that.
Next door is a tea bar that serves coffee. And what is that tea bar called, Jason?
Bantha.
The Bantha tea bar.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's go get a drink. Yeah, all right. Sounds good, right? I texted you, Jason, place is locked. What do I do? And you didn't respond. So.
Because I was massaging someone.
Rubbing somebody's shoulder.
We're on our own.
We went next door, and there's this dude with curly hair and glasses behind the bar. Hey, what can I get you? We got 3 French press coffees. Mm-hmm. Talking to him, his name's Jack. Jack blew our minds with his stories. He knows you. He worked at Merge Records. He signed Darkest Hour. I was like, dude, I met the coolest dude like next door. We're drinking his coffee. He's telling us stories. And I mean, the 3 of us, we must have been sitting there like, you know, we just had like, this is, yeah, tell us more. And when we were finally done, he got the owner, I guess the guy who owns the tea bar.
Yeah,
also,
Brett Ponytail.
Brett Ponytail, that's it.
Yeah.
Leather jacket, total soft-spoken sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah.
He runs the art gallery too, so he's like, "I'll come and let you guys." He was like, "I'll let you guys in, but I want to grab a piece of coffee cake first." He's just standing there eating cake, listening to Jack's story. We're talking about shows in the Lehigh Valley, back where I grew up. And I've said this on the podcast before. People, when I tell people I live near Allentown, they give me badass credit that I do not deserve because Allentown was a rough hood back in the skinhead 80s days, you know.
Yeah.
I missed all that. I had nothing to do with
Where's that. Allentown versus Reading? Where's Unisound?
Unisound was Reading, right?
I don't remember.
I think Unisound.
I was in like 92 or something.
Yeah, Unisound used to be Reading. Now Reading is the silo. And,
okay.
Reading is about just under an hour west.
Okay.
So Lehigh Valley is like.
We're closer in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, we start talking about the Lehigh Valley and everything. Brett takes us next door and lets us in. And he went back and turned the music on. It was practically like a private showing because it was the 4 of us. And the fact that we met Jack, I got Jack's contact information.
You and Jack are going to go to who?
Drive Like Jehu.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to see Drive
Come
Like
on,
Jehu.
You're going. You need it for the story.
Yeah, I know.
For the podcast, man.
Stupid Jehu has to play Philly on a Tuesday night.
Tuesday.
I gotta work, man. I'm a grown-up. I'm a grown-ass man with a job. You know?
He's a grown-ass man.
All right. With a whose side are you? Are you going to the show? Whose side are you on?
Maybe I'll go to the show. Dude, I got no day job and no child. I'll meet you down there.
The whole point of my story is Brett's like, okay, I'll let you in next door. I go to get up. I look at my phone. Jason responds, go next door to the tea shop. See Jack. I was like, this is unbelievable. Just the way that the whole thing tied together was written in the stars, if you will.
That's awesome.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was really good. So much fun. All right. So we covered – There, I just checked off Syria like it was a quickie thing.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Origins of Christianity. Check. Okay.
Covered that. We're done. Pray for Frodus.
Pray, oh my God, that is totally going to be the title of this. A pray for Frodus. It's going to be the title of this episode. Absolutely.
So what for me, what's really weird, especially with all of the serious stuff being so heavy and doing a fair amount of, you know, like NPR radio interviews and stuff like that, they always edit my funny stuff out. So everyone always assumes I'm super solemn. Right. And then the subject matter is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So like we were saying earlier, like it's either on or it's off, right?
Right. Right.
And so what is interesting to me is I am navigating all of these emotions in straight up public, like on radio interviews and like, hey, how does he feel about that? Oh, why don't we listen to this and hear him almost cry on national radio?
Right, right.
But it's a weird, it's something I kind of started to think about last week where it's, I am dealing with accepting, not kind of accepting the mission, but like, again, none of this was going to happen. Like, I didn't want to, this wasn't a plan that I was ever going to do. And then now that it's happening, and it's happening fairly in public, it's a very interesting, and some, it's never uncomfortable. Like, I'd want to quit, but it's also kind of weird to just be like throwing it all out there all the time.
Sure. It must be emotionally taxing to dump your guts like in public all the time. But
yeah,
I think from our angle, and I don't mean our, I don't want my podcast to speak as a representative to anybody, but I would think from the musical side, there's more of a sense of pride. You know, forgive me for overstepping my bounds. I didn't know you back in the day. I'm just meeting you now for the first time other than a few phone calls, but I think there's kind of a pride of like one of our own.
Really?
Just kind of gunned his way into this. It's kind of like, whatever happened to that dude in that band? Oh, he's running a lawnmower somewhere now. Oh, okay.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think one of our own is kind of doing something like honestly, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, all these bands and these records and everything, doesn't mean shit, honestly. It's important, but if for some reason, you know, just looking at my record collection to my right, if one of those bands never existed and I eliminate that entire record, I got a whole shelf full of records. I would have been fine, right?
Right.
But when somebody actually finds some gravity in their life and they actually find something heavy that they can do, more power to you. And
right.
The fact that you're kind of from the scene, I think there's kind of a little bit of a sense of pride where it's like, I had Frodus records. I listened to this. That's rad that somebody that we feel like we could familiarize with. You're not some weird NPR guy photographer that's like,
I
went to Syria and
I
made a life commitment to photography.
Like, no, you're a joker and you're a total jackass and you're one of us. And But you have this archive of something that's amazing and no one else even tapped into it. It's kind of cool. It's kind of championing one of our own, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's, thank you.
No problem.
Yeah.
Was that ass kissy? I didn't mean to put this
no. that way. No. I mean, because like, I know exactly what you're saying. Like I think about all the time. Do you guys remember the movie 7-12 Monkeys?
Yes.
7-12 Monkeys.
No, not 7-12. 12 Monkeys. Brad Pitt.
We're thinking 7 Brad Pitt. Yeah.
7, yeah, 12 yeah.
7 Brad Pitt. I didn't know. I don't remember any monkeys.
Brad Pitt was in 12 Monkeys. Yeah.
No. Yeah, I got it.
There was a scene in 12 Monkeys where there's a car and they like drove it off in the woods, and on the back panel of the car there was a shelter sticker. And we all got so psyched, like, dude. It kind of felt like this. Like, if what you're saying is similar to the way I felt when I saw a shelter sticker in the movies, I got so psyched. Like, right. Dude, yes. Like, they're in the movies.
I don't remember the shelter sticker from 12 Monkeys, but yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. That's not Ass Kissy at all. That's enlightening.
Yeah.
Hey, let's cover something else that's super interesting about you. All of you could have been podcasts, but this came out of your mouth, so I'm going to quote you.
Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, no. I'm quoting you. This came out of your mouth. You run the third highest ranked Airbnb in Washington, D.C.? Or something like that?
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay. Would you care to go a little?
Little further in the Airbnb business?
That is correct. No. So essentially, I have a 100-year-old house, and 12 years ago, a bunch of us shared a storage space together. It was all of my drum stuff, Darkest Hour stuff. International Noise Conspiracy had some of their equipment in there. And like four or five of us just had a storage space. And then my wife and I ended up getting our house a decade ago. And everything just went into the basement. You know, like all that stuff just filled our basement. It was there forever. And then we really started thinking, like when the collapse happened in 2008.
Yep.
Now what? I don't, you know. You know, all the Frotus lyrics are real sentiment. Like, I don't trust any of those business people. I just don't, you know. And then it came out in public of why no one should. Right. And so what do you do? How do you secure life? You know, like, and then the other part of it, too, is kind of knowing that at some point I wanted to do a book tour on my book on Syria. Being that I'm a massage therapist and we kind of work for ourselves, I just have to choose when to lose money. Like no one gets a vacation or any of that stuff.
Gotcha.
So it was, well, maybe what we do instead of investing is we take whatever we would and we build out our basement. And we were kind of coming up with a bunch of different ideas on what to do. And I took the time to really figure it out. So it was intense. We dug down 3 feet. So the ceilings are 9 feet tall. It's a pretty big space. It's fairly soundproofed. It's not 100%.
How did you dig down 3 feet in a basement and not have drainage problems?
That was the big, it's all about gambling, right?
No,
listen.
I don't understand that either, but it sounded so awesome.
That was tight. I'm going to write that down. That's the title.
It's all about gambling.
It's all about praying for Frodo.
I know a little bit about it. I know a little bit about construction, and you're not supposed to do that. That's the only reason I asked.
No, because what happened was we've got the main line, the main drain of the house, right? That comes down and then it buries underneath the slab. And so the way that we had to figure out how far down we could go is we had to go down with jackhammers and jackhammer a little portion of the slab out on two sides, and both sides were different. And then the structural engineer was like, well, I've never seen this. Like,
of course. That's never good.
I was like, of course you haven't. That is the way my whole life is, something new and something odd. So then we jackhammered out a third part, and that was different. So we had three different depths of foundation, We had to dig down where the pipe was to see how far down it went underground. We could only go as far as the pipe went, right?
Right.
And so it went below 3 feet, and that's how we figured it out. So we went down and then did that. But, you know, it was trial by fire, man. You know, I mean, it was a serious – I didn't really think about how intense it was until we got it. I did not do a lot of the work. No way. I was like kind of the general contractor on it. And so, you know, we had to pour a new floor and make a door and windows. And it was like, it was literally like building an apartment from scratch. The only thing that was there was the side two walls, and then everything else had to get created. Yeah. And then, you know, being in the service industry, my wife and I know how to set things up and make it look right and everything else. And so we're all about infrastructure. So we had it all set up and people come and we're really attentive to make sure it's exactly, there's nothing worse than paying any amount of money and showing up and something sucks. That's like, whether it's your dinner or whether it's a place you stay or whatever. And so I had this grandiose vision that we do this Airbnb and I'm downstairs making waffles for everyone and we're hanging out and we're just like partying all night. And that just never happens. That has happened. That has happened three times, you know, but someone was like, hey, do you guys want to hang out? I was like, I will be down there in 5 minutes.
Making waffles.
I was like, do you guys want some waffles? Like, it is definitely 9 p.m. We've already eaten.
There's a good chance our next road trip is going to be to your bed and breakfast. And
you should.
Yeah. We're going to eat there isn't enough waffle mix in the greater Washington, D.C. area, son.
There was great. Actually one of the weirder early Froda shows in Adams Morgan. It was this place called D.C. AC. We couldn't play a...
I see what you did there.
What? What?
D.C. AC?
Yeah, D.C. Art Center is what it was called. It's like the second story.
I thought that was a play on AC/DC.
Oh, I mean, well, you know what? Maybe it is. But wow. There you go. Deep.
That wasn't the joke?
Oh, no. Okay. That's the name of the venue where...
Right.
Where we opened up.
I saw the logo with the little lightning bolt and everything. Like, I had it all. I have t-shirts planned. I'm ready, dude. Right next to the Pray for Froda shirt. Right, right.
Where we played one song. It was Jeff Turner, the singer for Grey Matter. He did a solo thing. And we made waffles for the audience and served the audience waffles and played a song called Waffle Time.
Wow.
That is early Froda's days. You're just getting waffles.
That's like a Zeke and Zach show.
Yeah, dude, straight up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Old school.
Yeah.
Frodo's waffles. You should read the notes on this episode. This is weird.
So essentially, yeah. So we decided to do this Airbnb with the hopes of it would do well enough that I could then go out and do some of my Siri related stuff and not have to worry about how much money I'm losing. Mm-hmm. I mean, which I still lose all the time, but it doesn't hit as hard with that going on. Right. And it's one of those things where it's like, you never know how it's popular or whatever, but they like Airbnb ranks people. And yeah, we're like top three.
Wow. Why?
Why are we top three?
Yeah, what
because
what
people leave ratings and stuff, right?
Yeah.
No, I get that, but I mean, like, why aren't you fifth? Why aren't you 50th? Like, what makes you third is no joke, dude. Like, what? There's only two bed and breakfasts in D.C. that people are ranking higher than yours. And you just got done telling me the only thing that made sense was two walls. We had to make everything else up as we went. How did you get the third?
Because are they making waffles and there's like bigger LED TVs or something?
Well, no. So one of the things, actually, LED TVs is the exact thing I didn't want.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So I went out and got plasma televisions because plasma, if you ever watch some LED TVs, if they're not tuned right, it looks like it's shot on video as opposed to film. It's like a weird issue with some of the LED stuff. So
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I think I know what you mean.
It's called the refresh rate.
Ah.
It's essentially what it and plasmas are the highest. It's so funny, like all of the, it's classic marketing. All of the corporations push all this LED television stuff and the plasma televisions are much better. But so for example, I would rather pay a little bit more to get a smaller, really nice plasma TV that looks good everywhere you sit in a room.
Gotcha.
than paying for the 50-inch whatever LED. That's, do you know what I mean? But yep. like, yeah. so it's like little stuff like that. And so, you know, we don't do food, but there's coffee downstairs if someone wants it. Anyone needs anything, we go get it. There's like a little. There's one silk screen poster, like that I have from back in the day, down there just in case someone knows anything. It's the Frotus refused botched the dusters silk screen. It's a small little poster that it's like in the kitchenette. No one has ever known what it is.
Wow. Oh, that's only because the place is booked in the. And I want to come down in May. I would have lifted that poster.
I've had two run-ins. Not to say run-ins, like amazing coincidences related to the basement. One was this couple was coming up. And sometimes we get to meet and hang out with people, or at least interact with them, and sometimes we don't. And we were sitting there, and it was a husband and wife, my age, our age, a little bit older, couldn't tell. And the guy was like, yeah, we're from Melbourne. No, he's like, we're from Florida. I was like, oh, dude, I used to live in Florida. Where are you from? He's like, well, we're kind of on the East Coast beach. I was like, yeah, where? He's like, we're from a town called Melbourne. I was like, whoa. He's like, yeah, that dude, that's... I'm from Satellite. That's the beach town across from Melbourne.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah. I saw you're a musician. He was asking me this. I was like, yeah, of course. I was like, do you know any of the Melbourne bands? And the guy was like, yeah, a little bit. This dude went to middle school with the singer of my first band.
Whoa.
His name's Tony Ogle. He's like one of the most dangerous dudes around. And Tony sings now in a hardcore band called Coldside that tours with the Gnostic Front and stuff all the time.
Whoa.
But that was weird having someone know like my band from when I was 14. Like, uh-huh. And then the other one was there was an older couple from England that was staying, and I went to give them a tour of the space. Like, here's the kitchen, the bathroom, everything else. She's like, so I heard you're a musician. I was like, yeah, you know, and I'm trying to not really get into it and have to explain everything. And she's like, what kind of stuff do you play? I was like, oh, kind of rock, loud. She's like, I used to be really into punk. And this woman's in her 50s. I was like, whoa, okay. She's like, yeah. She's like, yeah, I used to have purple hair. I was like, so were you around in London, like first punk? It's like, yeah. It's like, that's amazing. She's like, oh, my brother's in a band. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I wasn't really thinking too much of it. And she's like, so do you guys just kind of play around here? I was like, no. It's like, I did a lot of touring when I was, you know, when I was active. It's like, oh, my brother's band, they start off kind of rock, and then they do a lot of touring too, but they don't tour that much anymore. She's like, now they're just kind of weird. It's like, what is the name of your brother's band?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Radiohead?
Correct.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
What?
No.
Just from that description, I was like, yeah that pretty much is yeah. Radiohead.
She was the drummer.
Oh,
Phil. She was the drummer's sister. Phil Selway. Yeah, Karen. Karen's.
Shut up.
And then all, I was like, yeah, she was like, oh, dude, Phil would love your place. And so Phil did a solo tour. And came through DC and tried to book at my house, but we were already booked.
Oh. Dude,
wow.
I was like, this is so crazy.
That's
but yeah, I got to go down on the show and we hung out and I gave him a bunch of Lost Origin stuff. It was amazing. It was really, it was totally amazing.
Wow. Isn't it funny how you went from 50-year-old British lady to
yeah.
Your brother's in Radiohead, and then you turned into that like that sheepish little kid. That's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
As soon as you said British rock band, now they're just weird. I was like, I remember what album that.
That's called Kid A.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, no. So that
okay,
it was kind
computer of was a vision of what's to come, and then Kid A was like, huh? And they lost everybody. And I loved Kid A.
That's actually when I liked them. I didn't like OK Computer or the record before, but I really – I'll never forget. So the grind band I was in, Combat Una Veteran, we were all in Florida watching Radiohead go on Saturday Night Live. And I got really excited to tell Phil this story to. I was like, dude, I got to tell you about the time I became a fan. He's like, sure. And we were all sitting there watching. Did you guys see this episode of Saturday Night Live?
Well, and I don't remember.
They had a patch bay old school analog synth. And then this guy had a wire attached to a ring. And he'd just be playing all these weird sounds and then go like, and like tweak out with this wire. It was so intricate and really, really powerful. We all just kind of sat there quiet. Like, things have just changed.
Wow.
It was incredible. Mm-hmm. I get really excited to tell whether it's someone as big as Radiohead or someone as small as, you know, Friends about like a pivotal moment that I've had with their music.
Yeah. Mm.
Perfect example, dude. So at the, so I had the photo exhibit in Pittsburgh and then I did another photo exhibit 10 days later, totally different in Manhattan in New York. And it was my first exhibit in Manhattan.
Okay.
And old school friend, Steve Brodsky from Cave-In and Mutoid
yes.
Man.
Yes.
Heck yeah.
Showed up and, you know, same thing. Steve had, you know, kind of heard about some of the stuff that I was doing, but didn't know any of it. And so he came and looked and I was like, man, what do you think about all this? And he's like, it's really intense. He's like, and it's so weird and crazy that you did it. And I was like, okay, now you're looking at all of this. Now think that the soundtrack to all of this was Cave-In, Converge, and Slayer.
Right.
That is what I was listening to taking all the photographs.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? Or like High on Fire or yeah. whatever. Right. So it was really, really cool for me. Like, I mean, I see Steve pretty frequently, but to like kind of bring him in and be like, and you were the soundtrack to this photograph. Like I could point yeah. to one, you know? It's kind of cool.
Wow. What did he say to that? Like that must have blew his mind.
He just, whoa.
I love that.
Dude, what do you guys think about Mutoid Man?
Oh my God. Love, love, love them.
Exactly. I'm embarrassed. I've never seen them live. Mm. Every time they've played in DC, I've shown up afterwards just because of scheduling. But when, was it Bleeder? Is that the name of the full length?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like when that is one of the only records
I believe that was my 2015 record for all of 2015 from the day I heard it up until 2 weeks before the end of the year. And then Baroness put out Purple and I was like, I think I'm going Purple. I love that Baroness album. But dude, Mutoid Man is like a narrow second. This album.
Yeah. I listened to it for literally 6 months straight. It's the only thing I listen to. I have not heard Baroness, I think, ever.
Wow.
I'll change that.
I can help you with that. Yeah.
What's it called? Purple?
The new album called Purple. It's ridiculously good. Yeah, it's so good. I love it.
And there's so much good. There's so much good music out there that's so easy to miss. And you just come back to it 6 months or a year or 6 years later.
It's
how it works. It's just so fun, though, to be smacked in the middle of the like Mutoid Man of them. But that first one came out in 2013, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The EP, I think so.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, from there till this new one. It's just, and I did get to see that. I saw them in at St. Vitus like last October or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Holy moly, so good. So good.
You know it's what like, I like about them is how they do all the posturing tough guy faces while they're playing.
Do they?
They totally don't bend. Their drummer is back there like, I am having the time of my life.
He's all smiles.
Kohler Cam? Dude, love Kohler Cam.
Kohler Cam. I watched a Converge Kohler Cam and I had like that Blair Witch, I'm going to throw up.
Totally.
He tied the GoPro around his neck and the whole time was like,
yeah.
The whole time I was like, I'm going to get sick. And a Converge song. Come on, man. You're just moving too fast to try to video it. If the camera's attached to your body and you're playing a Converge song. Right.
I think he said he duct tapes it to his chest or something.
Totally. I can see that.
I just loved how, like, seeing them, they sounded so much like that record. Like, there was nothing on the album that they didn't like replicate perfectly live.
So the tones are the same.
That's awesome. They were so right on. And I think too, they were playing, it was, you know, hometown show for them. So they were going to play like one more and they're like, didn't know what to play. And I was close enough that I could hear them talk like, you know, what should we play? And they played a song that they didn't practice. And I remember the drummer just shrugging like, yeah, whatever, let's do this. And perfect. I mean, I'm sure they like counted a few mistakes, but it was just like, oh, it was, they are so tight. Oh my God.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was really happy to hear it. Like, I've always been a huge fan of everyone's individual stuff. I mean, I actually don't know what Nick did before the band, but basically anything Steve and Ben did.
I don't know what Nick did either. I know everybody keeps saying Ben, and here's his laundry list of bands that he's in.
Yeah.
And Steve was Cave In, and then Nick is the sound guy from St. Vitus, or he runs sound or something like that.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
He's an employee at Vitus, I think.
That's awesome. I might be getting it right.
But, dude, any band that has the balls to put a cowbell in a song, I'm all for it. And that song, Reptilian Soul.
Mm-hmm.
During the you hear the in the background, and I'm like, rock on, man. That's got some 70s smack on it. I love that. I love that.
The other band that uses cowbell that you never expect to use cowbell is Entombed. That's my favorite metal band's Entombed. And they definitely bust out cowbell on Uprising, I think, on that album Uprising.
What's
Seth, you're doing Metal Gift Bandcamp.
No, I started Skull Toaster in 2011, which is metal trivia on Twitter. And that led And that led to just meeting a whole bunch of awesome, amazing, warm, loving people on Twitter. And then Metal Bandcamp Gift Club kind of came out from that. From that group of rabble rousers.
Yeah.
We talked about this. If you drop a skull toe, I'm going to have to charge you.
No. And it's been a beautiful thing. It warms my heart. It warms my heart to see that hashtag still being used on Twitter of people just gifting albums to one another. Like, and yeah.
It's me. I actually read a bunch of this. I read about it. I just wanted to bring it up. Let you know that I'm down.
Yay.
I'm aware.
No, that's awesome.
I'm in a metal band. Can you guys handle that? Zealot.
Ooh, what a great name.
Yeah, it's me and Mike from Darkest Hour.
Okay.
And this woman named Jess Kamen. She's the singer, but she sounds kind of like the singer from At the Gates. In the day, she was in a band called 1905 from DC, late 90s. And then we are still working on bass player scenarios, but we kind of sound like if Entombed was on Discord in the late 80s.
Oh, fun.
Oh, my. Okay.
Noisy. Which, nice. It's noisy, it's fast, but then I still get to play kind of weirder drum beats.
Yeah.
You're still sometimes working on the bass player situation. What is the deal bass player? Cronus, when I did Shelby's episode, it was like Shelby, guitar and vocals. Jason Hammaker, drums. There were 12 bass players.
Dude.
And I'm not exaggerating. I got to the bottom and started giggling. I was like, there's a dozen bassists.
Dude, there's a dozen. And then when we did Decahedron, there were three in Decahedron. And it got to the point where I don't remember. Oh, and then the band Regents I'm in now. It's me and the guys from Sleepy Time Trio. When that bass player bailed, I called an old friend that played on the first reunion. So it's like, Jake, seriously, I need you to be kind of honest with me. Is there something I'm doing that drives every bass player that I've ever been in contact with out the door? He's like, no. He's like, I think it's just a horrible coincidence. I was like, life?
We all talk about it. There's actually a Frotus Decahedron bass player commune.
The hashtag.
So how about that Hammaker? I mean, why can't he stick that kick drum where it belongs, right? And they all high-five each other.
He keeps bringing up cowbell. Come on. What is this?
Hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's. I mean, at the very beginning, like when Frotus was started, I mean, we were in high school. So the guy that was in the band originally was a year older and he went to college. You know, there's that. And then his replacement came home from school and said that he wasn't going to move. And then he ended up getting into Northwestern University or something in Chicago. Then he moved to Chicago. And then it just was kind of like age for a while. And then everything kind of solidified with, we had a bass player, Howard, for a while. He was a little bit older. And then everything kind of solidified in the band when Nate joined. And then we did, that's when we did FCI, Conglomerate International. That was the first thing Nate recorded on.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's not like I'm playing anything that hard. You know,
just some bands that have that rotating that one roster spot.
Well, I think
Spinal Tap and the drummers.
Yeah, I know. I think it's also too is when Shelby and I play, like when whatever we do creatively, it just comes out. Like we're not a band that sits there and like crafts the songs, you know? I mean, like the very, very first Frotus, the first six songs we ever played were written in two practices. That was our first 7-inch.
Wow. Nice.
You know, like for a while we just would crank things out. And so I think sometimes the third member, the bass player, maybe is either intimidated by the sheer like volume of like, here we go, like you know, and the album's done.
I remember I remember talking to Shelby when I to do research on whoever I'm talking to. I went to his Bandcamp page and I was like, you gotta help me out navigating this thing. There's 66 releases on here.
Yeah.
By the time we were done with the podcast, he probably made two more. Like it was prolific. Music falls out of that cat, and I just
felt
like,
totally.
Oh, my goodness, like I can't cover all your bands. Pick a couple. I don't know. Like help me
out. Yeah.
Frotus and pick two. You know, he is nuts, man. He pumps it out.
Yeah. Man, that's his language.
That's what he does. Hey, man. Anything else you want to cover?
I don't know.
I mean, you don't know. I asked you. You feel like you wrapped up everything you had to say about the serious stuff? Where can people check out what you LostOrigins.com, right?
Yeah, LostOrigins.com. Yeah.
Is Zealot on Bandcamp?
No, not yet. Like that's we're writing. I've got band practice on Thursday.
Fun.
I'm hoping that band debuts before the year's over. My other band, Regents, that I've been – basically once this serious stuff really kicked in, I've been not in doing any music. Just I have to pick time, you know. But Regents, I'm pretty psyched this year is going to play the fest down in Florida.
Cool.
Gonna
wow.
Get our act together again.
Cool.
Go down and play, try to do a 7-inch or something beforehand.
Nice.
Trying to figure out the balance this year.
So there was the first half. Appreciate the time. Now flip the record over and listen to the second half.
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.